Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, and we are on the air. Chuck Moore speaks through Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much. And I'm waiting for the arrival of my guest. That would be Dr. Troy Lawrence. He is the author of Origins, The Origin of Matter, Space, Time, and Life. Dr. Lawrence is a young Earth creationist whose ministry and purpose is to reach others through teaching and sharing the incredible amount of evidence that supports the biblical account of creation, the Great Flood, and more. He acknowledges that many who reject the Christian faith do so because of their understanding of how the world came into being, evolution, and old Earth teachings. And of course, this is the age-old debate going back to the publication of Charles Darwin's book, Origin of Species, in 1859. I've written a bit on the topic in my book, The Apostles of Evolution, more from a political standpoint than scientific or religious. And nevertheless, I take a look at this question, and the main thing that strikes me with regard to evolution, and did so quite a while back, was the fact that I'm just going to see where Dr. Burroughs is. Let me just. Yeah, that's okay. If you can't make it, I'll do it again, because this is a subject that's interesting to me. Basically, the question is whether or not human life emerged out of the small warm pond, as Darwin wrote about in his journal, and somehow through a process of breeding evolved into animals and eventually human beings, or whether or not we're born of one mother and one father, which is, of course, the biblical presentation. One of them is called a science, and if you disagree with it, then you're anti-science and you're almost seen as beyond the pale. The other one, by its own definition, is based upon faith, since it acknowledges that there's no hard scientific evidence of how man was created. And thus you go on faith, and I would suggest that the creationist version of things is actually at least as scientific as the Darwinian theory, and in many ways makes more sense, especially now that there are scientists who have speculated and who have claimed that that basically man appears to have been descended from one mother. They call her the mitochondrial Eve, and even perhaps one father, who's called the Y chromosome Adam. So, you know, however it happened, the politics around this, all the way from the publication of Darwin's book right up till today, has been fierce and vitriolic and emotional. And the people who advocate Darwin often will turn the tables, and instead of focusing on their actual theory, which is not only unproven, but is fantastical, instead they'll turn the tables and try to talk about specifics of the Bible where they get very literal. They get even more literalist than the most fundamentalist of Protestant preachers, and they'll say, how do you explain that Methuselah lived to be 900 years old? Do you actually believe that? I mean, they get very accusational as they wag their finger of absolutism. And my approach to it is simply to take a look at the theory of evolution itself and ask myself whether or not this is proven, and furthermore, what have been the political and social consequences of it? Because the fact that it is and has been upheld with such ferocity by the establishment, all the way from its publication, Darwin's publication in 1859, up till today, tells me that there is something rotten in Denmark. There's a reason why this is so fiercely adhered to. I mean, this is the cornerstone of the humanist faith, as it were. It's actually the first tenet of the Humanist Manifesto, which was published in the 1930s. And it's even more religiously observed than global warming and other scientific theories that are still just that, theories. And the reason, I think, is that I kind of, at least as I speculated, sort of what I concluded in my own book, Apostles of Evolution, is that the theory of evolution is a theory of breeding, biologically, where superior members of the species breed with other superior members somehow, what Darwin called natural selection. And out of this comes, out pops eventually after umpteen million years or whenever, a new superior species. And implied in this, first of all, is that we're not all created equal, but that we are at different rungs of the evolutionary chain. And that as such, the moral imperative switches from a divine God who gives a series of moral and ethical precepts to the world, to one that is a material. In other words, to one that is, the ultimate virtue becomes how to advance the species so we can advance life on Earth, how to create a superior species so we can become, you know, better, more superior, supermen, as it were. And while obviously it is the job of human beings, it is hardwired into us to try to improve our life on Earth, biologically, spiritually, and in every other way, and that we've done that by observing the nature of God's universe and of God's world, and we've learned to harness those aspects of that nature, both real and abstract, in a way that benefits us and improves our lives, and thus we live longer and we're healthier. But the Darwinian theory is different than that. The Darwinian theory holds that man can be perfected, that he can be literally advanced biologically. There's no evidence of that. This was the theory that animated the Nazi movement, and as such admitted it. I remember I interviewed a while back a gentleman who had been a Nazi youth, never the youth, a Nazi youth party, the Hitler Youth, and who was actually in the bunker in the final weeks of the Nazi regime. And in his memoir, he was like a foot soldier, and in his memoir, he noticed the first change that came about when the Nazis came to power in Germany in 1933 was that religion was replaced with Darwin. And the theory of evolution became the doctrine of the land. The theory of evolution gave a scientific imprimatur to the Nazi mystical idea of the Übermensch. The Übermensch, after all, or the Superman, was nothing more than an evolved form of human being. A human being that had become superior and that had become literally a new species, popping out of the species that we now know, which is mankind. And that the way to get there for the Nazi crackpot scientific theory was through breeding. And that's why they put together these Lebensraums, these stud farms where women who were deemed to have the right biological makeup, that they were pure Aryan, and that was a concept that came from theosophy and Helena Blavatsky and other mystics, this idea of the Aryan race. That these women who were blonde hair, blue-eyed, you know, who could trace their ancestry back, who were pure Germans or Nordic, as to the degree that could be determined, they would live collectively in these stud farms, and then, of course, men who were members of the SS, who also had a high standard of proof of your biological background, they would come, they have sex with the women, they give off, you know, superior offspring. So when I was in Europe a couple of years ago, on the train, we actually met this young woman from Norway who said that Norwegians were taken by the Nazis, Norwegian women primarily, and they lived on these farms, and then they were impregnated, and they gave birth to what they hope to be, the Übermensch, the superior, highly bred human being. And that, you know, this was in today's world in Norway, it's a disgrace to have that in your family. But the idea was quite scientific, if you accept the Darwinian theory, that in order to improve the human race through a process of breeding, eventually what would emerge would be a new race, a superior race, a more well-bred race. That was called the Übermensch. The Übermensch would be blonde hair, blue eyes, super strong, live to be up to 200 years old, have excellent health, and have cosmic consciousness, have the ability to know and to perceive things that that we can't know because we're not that superior. Karl Marx developed the theory on a social level, and in fact, Marx wanted to dedicate his second volume of Das Kapital to Darwin. And at his funeral, Engels, his business partner and financier, acknowledged that it was Darwin's theory that gave basis to Marx's entire structure. This idea that instead of biological evolution, Marx transformed this onto social evolution, that societies would go through evolutionary phases. It would start with primitive man, then into feudalism, and then eventually into capitalism, then socialism. And finally, it would reach the ultimate panacea, the utopia, which Marx called communism. And communism, of course, is something that would occur when man had become transformed, literally, socially, biologically, and in every other way, to be collectivized. In other words, all of the bourgeois affectations that had been created by those who sought to exploit, you know, the central conspiracy theory of Marxism, those being the bourgeoisie and the exploiters, such as private ownership, free trade in goods and services, money as a means of exchange, family, love, faith, commitment, loyalty, all of these things which were invented, or which were what Marx called false consciousness, would be swept away and man would become a collectivized being. In other words, where everything becomes absolutely equal. Man lives in perfect harmony with nature. There is no more nation state. There's no more war. And that we basically become a one world international ant colony. This was the ultimate dream of Marx and his idea of the Übermensch. Some have called it Homo Sovietica. And all of these things, the two socialistic experiments of the 20th century, those being Nazism and communism, they drew their moral imprimatur, their reason of existence, their raison d'etre from the Darwinian theory of evolution, this idea that man can be evolved, man can be improved literally. Now, the Judeo-Christian idea is that individuals can improve themselves through a belief in God, a relationship with God. In the case of the Jewish people, it was a covenant with God that had been entered into at Sinai. It's a covenantal relationship that has certain obligations accompanying it, and those include moral and ethical precepts. For the Christian, it was a personal relationship with God, as intercession by Jesus, serving as the Christ. And by the way, we should note as a sidebar that Jesus, as a Jew, stated or is credited with having stated in both the books of Matthew and Acts that the covenant between God and the children of Israel is forever. And that one, not one single jot or tittle of the entire Torah can ever be changed. But putting that aside, the fact is that it is a spiritual evolution. It is a voluntary evolution that people can choose to evolve themselves or they can choose to sin. But that either way, we are all created equal. That's a biblical concept. It comes right out of the book of Genesis. God created man and women in his image. And it does, by the way, say women, thus implying that men and women are equal. and that they are both equal under God. They both have a soul. They both are images of God. And thus, every single human life is a world in and of itself. It is unique. It is worth living and worth saving. Not so for the Darwinians. I mean, Hitler saw, you know, people who were not useful to the state that could be expended. Marx saw people who were enemies of the people, enemies of the state who could be expended. And in fact, that's why communism and Nazism were involved in the slaughters of hundreds of millions of human beings. And they did it under the moral imprimatur of Darwin's idea of improving the species, getting rid of those who are standing in the way of progress, whether they are standing in the way biologically by just existing, as was the case with the Nazis, or whether they were standing in the way because they were not politically correct. They were impeding genuine progress for what they viewed as the people, and thus they had to be removed, and they felt perfectly justified in doing so. And so you have a different philosophy when it comes to Darwinism versus creationism. And whether or not, we're going to get into a squabble about the science of it. My understanding, and I'm not a scientist, I'm more of a writer and a journalist, is that the prime means of determining the age of things still is carbon dating, and that carbon dating cannot go back more than 10,000 years. The general number for biblical creation is about 7,000 years, and carbon dating is something that I believe dates matter that had been living, and fossils. So there's nothing that proves that human life on Earth had been around for millions of years, which is a standard belief of the evolutionists. And I think that they need that belief in order to justify and in order to sort of soften, if you will, their evolutionary theory, because that way they can say, well, I mean, the evolution takes place over a million years or over hundreds of thousands of years. And it sort of obscures any hard look at whether or not an evolution has actually ever taken place. I would suggest that it hasn't. I have an open mind on the topic. If someone can show me evidence that it has, I am open to that. I'm not an expert, but I have over time interviewed many, many scientists, science writers, evolutionists, evolutionary theorists, and I have asked them if they can present any proof. And usually after a lot of kicking and screaming and yelling and possibly slamming down the phone, it becomes pretty apparent that they cannot. I've had a couple of cases where they directed me to a scientific journal or a peer-reviewed scientific article, which I then went ahead and read, and I found later on that it did not actually claim or prove that an evolutionary event had taken place. So, you know, people who are responsible in that business will acknowledge that evolution is just a theory. It is not hard science. It is not fact. And I would suggest and argue that it's a bad theory. Again, I'm open-minded for proof otherwise, and I'd like to see evidence on the contrary. Anyway, it doesn't look like Dr. Troy Lawrence is going to show up. We probably got our times mixed up. So that means I will have him back at another time. I want to do this interview. I'm very interested in what he has to say. But I appreciate the opportunity to talk a bit about evolution. I would direct you, if you're listening, to my book, which is Apostles of Evolution. I worked very hard on that book. And I get into the politics of evolution, how it undergirded both Nazism and communism, and how what was the result of it, which has been essentially a removal of man from the view of created by God. And I would suggest that whether or not you are a believer or even an atheist, there is a benefit and there is a virtue in believing in the absolute uniqueness and sacredness of every single human life. That is the basis of our American Constitution, which did come from the biblical view, but whether it did or not, it is an idea that is not only worth preserving and protecting and defending, but it is a progressive idea. It's an idea that is worthy of advancement so that we can genuinely have not biological or social evolution, but that we can have creativity and freedom and invention, and we can continue to grow as a human race in terms of learning how to live life better and improve our lives on Earth and create better lives for ourselves and our families. So on that note, I want to thank you for listening. I will direct you to my Amazon Kindle page if you'd like to get a copy of Apostles of Evolution. I'm also pleased to have launched a recent broadcast called Boston Uberman. I drive Uber, which I love doing, by the way, in Boston. And as part of my driving, I go on Facebook and I do these Uberman broadcasts where you see me and hear me discuss issues of the day and even occasionally invite my Uber passengers to join me. So that's available on Facebook. You can go to Boston Uberman for that. And my books are all available on Amazon Kindle. There's a long list of them. So I want to thank you for listening this afternoon. I shall be back another time with Dr. Troy Lawrence. So stay tuned for that once we fix our schedules. And thanks for listening, everybody. This is Chuck Morse. Thank you.